And we're holding the top of Lamed Amud Aleph. We started discussing yesterday the question of Taruvas Chametz. If Chametz is mixed in to other food, when do we say it's bottle? When do we say it's not bottle? So the two major factors that we're dealing with in our sugya are the question of whether it's b'minoy and versus shaloi b'minoy. Is the chametz mixed in to another food of the same type, where there you can't tell what taste the chametz is giving into it because it's all the same type? Or plus you actually have an opinion of Rabbi Yehuda in a few places in Shas that min b'minoy loy bottle, that a substance which is usur mixed into another substance of the same type can never be bottle, even if it's a tiny amount of the whole thing. So you have that. That's b'minoy, and then you have shaloy b'minoy versus where you have it's mixed into a different type of food. Where then you can be talking about whether it's nice and tam or not, whether there's enough of it to give a flavor into the food. And then the other factor that we're dealing with here is bismanoi versus shaloi bismanoi. So bapashtus, bismanoi means during Pesach itself. Shaloi bismanoi means we're talking about if you have chametz sh'over olava Pesach, chametz that was in a yid's possession during Pesach, and then after Pesach is mixed in with other stuff. We touched on briefly yesterday, we'll talk about maybe again today, Bez Hashem, what happens if it gets mixed in? Well, we will. We'll talk about what happens if it gets mixed in before Pesach. We'll get to that. Anyway, so we had three opinions on it so far. We had Rav saying that if it's bismanoi, it's always going to aser, no matter how small the amount, whether it's minoi or shaloi b'minoi. If it's shaloi bismanoi, if it's chametz sh'over olav Pesach and it's mixed in minoi, then still it'll be asuin. The only way it'll be mutter if it's shaloi bismanoi, if it's after Pesach, it's chametz sh'over olav Pesach that was mixed in, and it's shaloi b'minoi. That's the only case where Rav will say that it's mutter. And the reason we said is because, first of all, Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda that the issur of chametz sh'olav olav Pesach is d'oraisa. So he's gonna say therefore. It's one thing shaloi b'minoy. Therefore, you're gonna say okay. You can say if it's nois and tam, then it'll aser, but otherwise not. He's not gonna go so far as to be goizer by that. Just like he wouldn't be goizer by any other isurim. As opposed to, though, when it's during Pesach itself, usually Rav holds that you need nois and tam. But over here, since chametz is an isur kares, then therefore he says even if it's mixed shaloi b'minoi, we're still going to make a gzeira that it's usur even b'mashahu, because that might be confused with b'minoi. So that's according to Rav. Then we said according to Shmuel that Shmuel is pretty much the opposite of Rav in that. He says only in order for it to be usur, you'd need both negative factors, that it's bismanoi, that it's doing Pesach, and that it's b'minoi, and that it's mixed in to the same type of substance. Only then would it be usur b'mashahu. Otherwise, if it's even during Pesach, shaloi b'minoi, or if it's after Pesach, whether b'minoi or shaloi b'minoi, either way, then a mashahu of it is not going to usur. So we said because basically he holds like Reb Shimon that the whole concept of chametz sh'over olav Pesach is only drabanan, it's only a knas after Pesach is over. So it's like any other issur. He's not going to make a gzeira on Pesach itself that shaloi minoy otu minoy, that if you're allowed with she'ena minoy with mashahu, you might confuse that with minoy. So therefore, according to him, the only way that it's oisib mashahu is only if it's minoy and only during Pesach. Then we had Rabbi Yochanan, both Rav and Shmuel agree on a fundamental idea that with all Isurin Shabbat Torah, b'minoy asurin b'mashahu, that if you have that Isur is mixed into minoy, then it'll be asur. So that is why both Rav and Shmuel are saying that during Pesach itself, the chametz is mixed with minoy, then it's going to asur just b'mashahu. Then we had Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. Rabbi Yochanan says that no, you always need nois and tam. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says, applying that to chametz, when it comes to chametz for Pesach, then we're going to say whether it's b'minoy or shaloi b'minoy, the fact that it's doing Pesach is going to make it osur, even if it's going to make it osur, but not for a mashu, only nois and tam. So Rabbi Yochanan is the most lenient of all of them. He's going to say even during Pesach itself, a mashu is not going to be osur, only if it's nois and tam, whether it's minoy or shaloi b'minoy. And if it's after Pesach, shaloi b'zmanoy, then it's going to be mutter regardless, even if it's nois and tam. Because again, he holds like Reb Shimon. So in that particular detail, he agrees with Shmuel that the halacha is like Reb Shimon about chametz sha'over all of a Pesach, that it's only also derabanan, and therefore Reb Yochanan doesn't find the need to aser it, even though it's nois and tam, whether it's minoy or whether it's she'enei minoy. So those were the three opinions so far. So now we're going to have the psak halacha, Omar Rava, Hilchasa. The bottom line halacha is a hybrid of these opinions. Chometz bizmanoi, when you're talking about bizmanoi during Pesach itself, bein b'minoi, bein shaloi b'minoi, osu b'mashahu, then whether you're talking about minoi or whether you're talking about enoi minoi, whether you're talking about, for example, let's say, an example of minoi would be, let's say, for example, wheat that's chometz that got mixed in with wheat that is kosher Pesach, or shaloi b'minoi is an example, let's say you have wheat or flour or something fell into a tavshil. So then, osa b'mashahu k'rab. So since it's during Pesach, it'll be oser even in a mashahu, like Rav says. So now Rashi and Tosfos disagree what the basis of what Rava is saying is. Rashi learns that it means that Rava is saying, therefore, that there's no difference in this regard between chometz and other isurim. There's no difference. The basic, when it comes to chometz, he says Rav is more machmir and says that the same concept of mashahu would apply even to she'enei minoy. But when it comes to minoy, this that Rava is saying, the halacha is like Rav, when it's minoy, that it's oiso even b'mashahu, implies, says Rashi, that the same thing would apply to other isurim Shabbat Torah as well. Which means, therefore, for example, Rashi gives an example. If, let's say, for example, basa b'cholav, if a small amount of milk fell into a pot of meat, then it would be oser b'mashahu, because that would be an example. That would be an example of min b'minoy. So Rashi says that's how it is. With chametz, we have the extra chumra that we're applying it to she'enei minoy as well. So when do we say shishim would be if it's enoi minoi? That's according to Rashi. Tosfos and most other Rishonim disagree with Rashi on that and say that no, ultimately Tosfos has a long discussion over here, but says that no, when Rava is saying over here, the halacha is like Rav regarding chometz for Pesach, whether it's b'minoi or shaloi b'minoi, he is saying like Rav, the actual halacha is like Rav, but not for the same reason that Rav is saying it. Rav is saying that the same thing would apply to Kol Yisur and Shabbat Torah. Rava would say only by Chometz for Pesach do we have the Chumrah of Chometz. Do we have the Chumrah, and therefore we're going to apply it even to Mashu. Usually we would say, B'chol Yisur and Shabbat Torah, not like Rav, we would say that other Yisurim are only Oysa, whether B'minoi, whether Shaloi B'minoi, only if they're Nois and Tam. Tosfos actually brings another opinion over here of Rabbi Natam that says that even by chometz Pesach it would be oiser only. He has a different girsa in the Gemara over here. Takes out the word b'mashahu karav and says that even by chometz Pesach it would be oiser even only if it's nois and tam. That opinion is not accepted lahalacha though. The accepted opinion is the main body of Tosfos is saying over here. That chometz for Pesach is oser b'mashahu if it's mixed in during Pesach, whether b'minoi, whether shaloi b'minoi, but not because that applies to other isurim Shabbat Torah, but because both parts of that are unique to Pesach, unique to chometz, because of the chumrah of chometz. So that's the first half of what Rava is saying. Then the second half, the Rambam, by the way, gives a different reason why chometz should be oisir b'mashahu during Pesach, whether b'mino or shaloi b'mino. The Rambam gives a different reason for it because he says chometz is a dover sheyesh lematirin, which because after all, it'll be mutter after Pesach. The noisakelim have a hard time understanding what the Rambam means by that because after all, if it's chometz, then you have to be mevarid. It's not dover sheyesh lematirin because you're not allowed to have it after Pesach. So there's a good deal of discussion what the Rambam means by that. Anyway, the bottom line is Rava is telling us that chometz for Pesach is oisib mashahu, whether it's minoy or shaloi b'minoy. Then shaloi b'zmanoy continues Rava when it's after Pesach. Then ben b'minoy ben shaloi b'minoy mutter k'reb Shimon. Then we're going to say whether minoy or shaloi b'minoy, then it'll be mutter like Reb Shimon. So that is so it's similar. So it's similar to what Rabbi Yochanan said, but not exactly, because Rabbi Yochanan, the first half of it, when we're talking about bismanoi, Rabbi Yochanan had said that you need nois and tam. According to the girsa that we have in front of us, which according to Rashi and most of the other Rishonim, except for Rabbi Tam, you need that even Masha who is Oyser. But when it comes to after Pesach, when it comes to Shaloi Bismanoi, then we're going to say it's Mutter Kirab Shimon, because again, like Reb Shimon says, Chometz to Avraham of a Pesach itself is only Oser Derabanan. So therefore, it doesn't make the Taruvus Oser, even if it's Nois in time. So the question is, so actually, before we continue with that, now these are the two factors that the Gemara is focusing on over here, whether it's Bismanoi or Shaloi Bismanoi, and whether it's Nois and Tam or not. But there's other factors that the Rishonim mention as well that affect this, which we touched on yesterday. One of them is, what kind of Taruvus is this? There's Taruvus Yavish b'Yavish or Lach b'Lach. And there you have. Now, Lach b'Lach would be, for example, let's say you have liquids mixed together, or also any time that you have one thing imparts a flavor to another is considered Lach b'Lach. Yavish b'Yavish, classic Yavish b'Yavish would be, let's say, for example, you have pieces of meat mixed together. Let's say some of them are kosher and some of them are treif, and you don't know which are which. But that kind of Yavish, in the case of Pesach, would be, let's say, for example, you have pieces of bread and matzah mixed together and you don't know which is which. But the point is, each one still has its own identity. If you were able to recognize which was the chometz piece, you'd pull it out, and that would be that. Then you have, for example, let's say flour is a little bit of a gray area. You have a machlokes Rishonim, whether flour is considered lach b'lach or yavish b'yavish. On the one hand, I mean, each grain of flour exists independently, sort of, you know. But on the other hand, can you really tell them apart? One grain looks like every grain looks like every other grain, and it's all mixed together. So you have poskim who say that in general, any mixture of flour would be considered lach b'lach. And then you have others that argue that maybe only if you had, let's say, for example, wheat that was chametz with wheat that was not chametz, and they were all ground together, that would be lach b'lach. But if, let's say, you had flour that was chametz mixed in afterwards with flour that was not, then maybe it would be still considered yavish b'yavish. Yavish b'yavish, many times we say, can be batel b'roiv. Do we say that over here is another whole discussion, again, because of the chumrah of chometz for Pesach, and we're saying during Pesach, it's, so we're saying during Pesach itself, it's oisa b'mashahu, so no. But again, after Pesach, where it's only also dirabanan, where the whole issa is only dirabanan, then we have more reason to say that it would be mutter, because chometz for all of our Pesach is only a knas dirabanan anyway. When did this mixture happen? So we're talking about, let's say, for example, so you have a few possibilities. You can have where chometz was mixed in before Pesach, during Pesach, or after Pesach. So during Pesach, we're saying it's oisib b'mashu. After Pesach, we're saying if the mixture took place after Pesach, so you had some chometz to olav olav Pesach. Let's say, for example, you had No. If it was hektish or a goy, then it's not chometz shor avraham of a Pesach. Think of it. You sell your chometz to the goy, and then after Pesach, you buy it back from him, or the rov buys it back for you, whatever, and then you're able to use it. No, chometz shor avraham of a Pesach would be if you didn't sell your chometz to the goy, you had it in your possession over Pesach. You didn't destroy it. You didn't sell it to the goy. You didn't whatever. So let's say, for example, now we talked about yesterday that the poskim tell us that this din of chometz shor olav Pesach applies, even you did proper bedikas chometz and then everything, and then you found something unexpected after Pesach, we still apply the knas of chometz shor olav Pesach to it. So let's say, for example, so you did everything you're supposed to, and then after Pesach, one day you open up your closet and you find, let's say, a box of cookies in there. So that would be chometz shor olav Pesach. So now we're talking about if now those cookies got mixed up with other ones, which would be yovish, or if you have, let's say that you crumbled up those cookies, and then if you crumbled up those cookies in order to make like a crumb cake or something, and mixed it with other crumbs, then we're saying also that it could be mutter, even though it's nois in tam. So then you have the question: if the mixture took place before Pesach, most poskim hold that before Pesach, since it's, even if it happened on erev Pesach, achar chatzos, even though chametz is already also to eat at that point, but the isur kores regarding chametz we said before only kicks in at night. Therefore, if it happens erev Pesach, then you still have room to be mekel and say that it's batal b'shishim. That it can be bottle b'shishim. You do also have, on top of that, you have another consideration, which the Gemara mentions in some places, called choyzer v'nir. Sometimes you can have an issu that was nisbatel, but then at a certain later time, that issu like wakes up and becomes osser again. One example of it is actually if you have a new thing of that same iser is poured in. Let's say you had, for example, by bosa b'chalav. Let's say, for example, you had a little bit of milk got mixed into a pot full of meat and it was bottle. But if later on you have more milk goes in there, then the original milk is choyzer v'nir. Because even though it was bottle, it didn't take on the identity of the meat. Actually, that itself is a machlokas, a poskim, whether it does or not. So the bottom line is there are very, very complicated dinim about this. There are three, just in Orach Chaim itself, just in Hilchos Pesach, there are three large simonim, and even larger in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, of course, that deal with these various dinim of Tarubas before Pesach and Simon Tov Mem Beis. In general, the dinim of Taruvus in Simon Tov Mem Zayin, cases where, for example, you find a grain of wheat in a cooked chicken or other cases like that during Pesach itself in Siman Tov Samach Zayin, you have a lot of different factors that go in over there, and a lot of different possible cases and a lot of different opinions of Rishonim and Achronim on the subject that result in when you're able to say that it is bottle and you're allowed even to eat it. When we say that it's when we say that it's bottle, maybe only to the extent that you can have hanah from it, but not actually eat it. When we say that it's completely osur, and cases of hefs and meruba and all that kind of stuff, it gets rather complicated. Okay, getting back to the Gemara, umi amar Rava hochi. So did Rava really say that after Pesach, if the chometz is mixed in, if chometz sh'ovar alav a Pesach that's mixed in, then Rava, you're telling us that it's mutter kirab Shimon, v'ha'amar Rava, Reb Shimon k'nasa konis. Didn't Rava himself tell us that Reb Shimon cancels and says you can't use chametz sh'over olav ha'pesach, hoy over olav ha'bal yirah ba'yimotze, because you were over on bal yirah ba'yimotze. So why all of a sudden is he allowing it here in a tarubis, even if it's nois and tam? The answer is hanimili be'ene, because Rava would say that knas only applies when the chametz is be'ein. You have in the scenario before, you take that box of cookies and start eating them, you have the chametz sh'ovar alav ha'pesach be'ein, then Reb Shimon will say the chachamim are telling you don't do that. Aval ayudei taruva sloy, but if you're just talking about that it was mixed into something else, even Rashi says you kept it be'ein and then you were over on it during Pesach, but we're not going to extend the knas so far as to say that now if it got mixed in a taruvas, that the taruvas should become osir. That far we're not going to go with that knas. So no. So that's the thing. So if you mixed it in during Pesach, then it's osir b'mashu. But we're talking about if you discovered in your cupboard a week after Pesach a box of cookies that you forgot to sell to the goy and you didn't ruin or whatever, then we're saying you're not allowed to eat those cookies themselves. But if you have a taruvus of them with other cookies or that you crumbled them up to make a crumb cake or something, then you have reason to be matir. Again, the actual practical halacha when it'll be mutter and when not, for that you have to consult Shulchan Aruch for the details, because there are more complicated factors involved over there. But the basic idea that Rava is telling us is that we're not going to apply the knas to that because you're not eating it be'ein. You're not, even though you had it be'ein over Pesach, you're not eating it be'ein right now after Pesach. Yeah, so right, so it's Right. So now there you have it. Now to get away with the problem is actually not so simple, because you do have an issue in halacha called ein mevatlin isur lachatchila. You're not allowed to take something that's usur and deliberately be mevatel it. So we would have to be talking about then when, for it to be mutter, it would have to be that you didn't know, let's say, or it accidentally got mixed in or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. As the Rava l'taimei, and the Gemara says Rava is going according to his own shita, this that he's saying that Tarova schomets after Pesach is mutter. The Amar Rava ki havein and beir Rav Nachman, because Rava says when we were talmidim in the yeshiva of Rav Nachman, ki havu nafki shiva yoyim de pischa, when the 7 days of Pesach would be over. Now why seven? They're living in Bavel. It should be 8 days of Pesach. So there's a few possibilities. One of them being that maybe in those times there was still makadosh al pi ariyah. It could be that Rav Nachman lived in a part of Bavel where the shluchim, at least sometimes, were able to get there in time for Pesach and for Sukkot, and therefore that they'd only have to keep the number of days of the Yom Tov, as it says in the Torah. Anyway, so when Pesach was over, Rav Nachman, Omar Lon, Rav Nachman would tell us Talmidim, Puku uzvinu chamira divnei chela, go out and buy chametz from the soldiers. The soldiers, it actually says, are goyim. Now, when did they bake this bread? Now, 1 second, do we mean baked? Literally, it can't be, because then it would be Pasachum. We mean they kneaded this dough on the last day, Pesach. Nevertheless, Rav Nachman is telling them they can go and buy it from these goyim, and it won't be a problem. Because the point is, he's not telling them to, because what are they doing? They're going to be buying sourdough from these goyim. They're not going to be then eating the dough or the bread as is. They're going to be mixing it into another batch of dough in order to, because they need sourdough for, they need sourdough starter for their bread. So therefore, so we see that Rava is saying that chametz sha'aval of Pesach is mutter al yedei tarovas. Yeah, that's mutter if it was mixed in to something else, even though it's nois in tam. Because what you're buying from the goy is a batch of dough, which then you're going to go and it can't be baked bread, because it would be pasakum, but it's you're going to be breaking it into pieces and mixing them into new batches of dough. Which your own dough you're making after Pesach, but you're using seur that came from the goyim that was made during Pesach, and we still see it doesn't aser. Yeah, so the point. Right, but the point is that still we see that there's no knas in it. So we see that Rava says that the knas would only apply to chametz shal of Pesach only if it's the actual chametz itself, not if it's al yedei tarovas. I mean, Rashi over here is explaining that these soldiers are goyim. There is actually a different explanation that some of the Mefarshim say, that maybe these soldiers were Jews, and in that case, it more directly relates to what we're saying earlier, even though this is chametz sha'al d'var Pesach in the possession of a yid, but since they're only using a little bit of it to make their batch of dough, then therefore it can be bottled. Well, not even bottle of shishin, that's what we're saying. Even if it's nois and tam, or in this case, it's a dovra machmitz, right? It's the thing that makes it able to become bread. Nevertheless, we'd be saying that's mutter, yeah. Okay. You know, this is Rava saying that. So we see that Rava holds according to his own shita. Okay. New discussion, which is going to relate a bit back to what we said about taruva slachas manoi, about the dinim of that. Omer Rav, Kderes b'Pesach Yishavru, pots that were used for chametz throughout the year, on Pesach, when it comes Pesach, you have to break them. Now, we're talking about pots made out of earthenware. So Rashi says like this. We just said before that Rav holds that chametz, even la'achaz manoi, is going to be osur. Because he holds like Rabbi Yehuda that it's going to be also b'hanah on a d'oraisa level. He holds that even after Pesach, it's oisah b'mashahu. Not like we just said, Rava says that after Pesach, it's not oisah b'mashahu, because Rava is going according to Reb Shimon. Rava is going according to the understanding of Shmuel and Rabbi Yechanan, who hold as far as chametz tra'aval of a Pesach like Reb Shimon. Rav himself holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Therefore, chametz sha'aval of a Pesach is also daraisa, and Rav holds it's oser even b'mashu. Reb Shimon holds, we just said, that there's only a knas, that's only derabanan. Reb Yehuda holds that chametz sha'aval of a Pesach is also daraisa, as we learned a couple of days ago. Rav holds like Reb Yehuda. And therefore, we said before, Rav holds that chometz shaloi bismano, b'mino also shaloi b'mino mutter, that even that b'mino, it's still going to be osu b'mashahu. So therefore, now one more thing Rashi points out is Rav also holds that noisin tam lifgam is also. Usually we say a pot that wasn't used for 24 hours, any food that was absorbed into the walls of it is now pogum. It's a more disgusting taste. It's not going to give a good flavor to the food. Rav holds noisin tam lifgam also. So even though you haven't used these pots for several days, and because they're chometz tikka pots, you didn't use them during Pesach, and now you're going to use them after Pesach, and it's a noisin tam lifgam, nevertheless, he's still osir. Now, and therefore, the only thing you can do is break the pots. Rashi points out the halacha is not like Rav for two reasons. Number one, first of all, we just said the halacha is like Rava, that taruva slachas mana is mutter, like Reb Shimon, so not like Reb Yehuda. Second of all, we anyway hold noisin tam lefgam mutter. So therefore, that's another reason to be matter it. But in any case, Rav, according to his own shitta, holds that the only thing you can do is break the pots. So the question is, v'amai, why even according to Rav should you need to break them? Lishinu achra pelo, even lishinu la'achra pesach, at least you should be able to keep them till after Pesach, the levid b'hu shaloi b'minon. And fine, even Rav agrees that la'achra pesach, and when it's shaloi b'minon, that it's only oser if it's nois and tam. So fine, then all you do is you make sure, wait till after Pesach, use this pot for some other kind of food, and then a mashahu will not be oyser, only if it's nice and tam. The little amount of food that gets absorbed into the walls of the pot is going to be a mashahu relative to the amount of food in the pot, and therefore, then it'll be good. Now, actually, that's not so simple. It really depends, actually, on the shape and the size of the pot, whether the poskim talk about in Hilchos Basa B'Cholav, for example, can we say that the volume of the walls of the pot is, in fact, less than 1/60th of the volume of the contents of the pot. It's not so simple. It depends on the shape and the size and whatever of the pot. In this case over here, though, one consideration is that obviously the whole pot, the whole wall of the pot is not composed of Isser. It only absorbed some Isser. So there is that to consider. So you don't have to consider the full volume of the walls of the pot, but less than that. It's chometz, fine, but it's still, right. So. Right, but and number two is also now when you're cooking after Pesach, the b'chlal, when you cooked in it even before Pesach, the entire tavshil that you were making in the pot is not chametz; it has chametz mixed into it. And now also after Pesach, you're not necessarily making something that's 100% chametz; it's partially chametz. So therefore, there's more reason to think that maybe the food and the walls in the walls of the pot will be batel b'shishim. And even Rav agrees that la'acha zmanoi, that shaloi bismanoi, that after Pesach, shaloi b'minoi, that a mashahu is not oyser. So according to Rav, why do you have to break these chametz tikka pots? Just save them for after Pesach and use them for any minoi. The answer is, because Rav says, yes, but we make a gzera, you can't do that because you might come to use them for minoy, and minoy, he's saying that it's even a mashu who is not bottle, and it's going to ask for the food. So therefore, to be on the safe side, break them and get new ones after Pesach. So Shainim, what would you be able to be cooking that you... So let's say, for example, before Pesach, you use this pot, let's say, to cook farfel, which is chametz. And now, after Pesach, instead, use it to cook meat or vegetables or something, which is ene mine. Yeah. Yeah. Meat is not chametz, yeah. Okay, so that's according to Rav. Ushmuel amar lo yishavru. Shmuel says you don't have to break the pots. Actually, Tosfos brings up a point. Even according to Rav, the Gemara is asking, why can't you save it till after Pesach and then use it for She'en Eminoi? What happened to Ein Mevatlin Isser L'Hatchila? What happened to the idea that you're not allowed to take the Isser and to begin with be Mevatl it with Shishim or whatever? Tosfos brings a couple of possibilities. One of them being that it's that like this, if the pots are going to be osur and you're going to have to break them, that's considered b'dievid. When we say in mevatan isa l'chatchila, that means exactly that, l'chatchila, not in a case like this, which would be b'dievid. Plus the fact here, you only have a mashu and it's shaloi b'minoi. So all those factors combined together that even according to Rav, in principle, you could do that. But Rav is saying, we don't want you to do that because you might end up cooking minoi in the pot and then it's going to become also. So yeah. Ushmul am a lo yishavru. Shmuel says, on the other hand, you don't have to break the pots. Ava mashi lahu la'achas manoi. What you do is you save the pots until after Pesach. Va'ovid b'hu ben b'minoi ben shaloi b'minoi, and then you can use them for minoi or shaloi b'minoi. Which goes like what Shmuel said before, because Shmuel had said before that the only way that chametz is oisib b'mashu is when it's bizmanoi during Pesach and when it's b'minoi. Here it's after Pesach and shaloi b'minoi, so it's only going to be oisib b'nois in tam. Good. The food in the walls of the pot is not going to be nois and tam because there's very little of it compared to the contents of the pot, and maybe even Shmuel holds nois and tam lefgam as mutter. Yes, we do paskin that way. No, we're talking about, you have a pot which was used for chametz before Pesach. What you do is, Shmuel is telling you, put it away during Pesach, or nowadays, what do? We sell it to the goy, and then after Pesach, you'll be allowed, but the point is, Shmuel is saying, even if you didn't sell it to the goy, so the chametz in the walls of that pot was in your possession during Pesach, nevertheless, you will be allowed to cook with that pot after Pesach, and it won't aser the food, because it will only aser only if it was nois and tam, and it's not nois in time, either because there's too little of it or because nois in time left gam, or both. What? No, you don't have to. Obviously, if you do agola, here we're talking about an earthenware one, you can't do agola. No. If you have chametz be'ein, if you have actual chametz stuck to the walls of the pot that's visible, then yeah, you have to clean it first. But we're talking about there's no chametz be'ein. There's only chametz embedded in the walls of the pot. Hagala doesn't help for earthenware kalim. So it's not going to take out, even if you take out something, it's not going to be enough. But yeah. Okay. As the Shmuel time, so the Gemara says Shmuel is going according to his own shita in this. Shmuel told the people who are selling pots after Pesach. Now they figured that we have a captive audience over here. Everybody is breaking their pots before Pesach, and now after Pesach, they need new ones, so we can jack up the prices. So Shmuel told them, don't do that. Ashvu zvini akandaichi. Charge a fair price for your pots, the Eloi, and if you don't do that, darshin l'chuk Reb Shimon, then I will darshin about you that the halacha is like Reb Shimon, that the pots are mutter after Pesach, and you don't need to break them in the first place. So the question is, v'lidrish lahu, knew, why is he only using that as a threat? He should be anyway darshining that. We just said that Shmuel holds like Reb Shimon. So even without the threat, even without needing a threat, he should anyway be passing to the people that they don't need to break their pots. The answer is Asri de Rav Hava. This particular story happened in Rav's territory, in Sura or someplace near that. So Rav is the mother de Asra. You have to follow his Piskei Halacha. And Rav himself holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Therefore, the people have to break their pots. But still, Shmuel is telling the pot sellers that if you don't charge fair prices, then I'm going to override that, and I'm going to tell everybody really the Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, and then they're not going to break their pots, and you're going to lose your customers. Okay. Another thing on this topic about kashering kalim. Hahu tanur de tochi betichya. There was an oven, and we'll see on Omid Beis whether we're talking about an earthenware oven or a metal one. The tochu betichya, where they smeared the oven with grease. Now, why would they do that? Rashi describes that. Rashi over here doesn't describe in detail. He just mentions that it gives a flavor into the bread. But in other places, Rashi explains that it was more like they're not so much baking the bread as frying it, sort of. So therefore, you need a little grease underneath it, just like when you're frying something in a pan. Anyway, and then they baked or fried bread on top of that grease. Asra Rava Bar Ahilai Lamech Lilrifta Afilab Milcha Loilam. So Rava Bar Ahilai said you're never allowed to eat that bread even with salt, meaning by itself, basically, because you don't eat bread plain, you eat it dipped in salt. But he asserted not only you can't eat that bread with milchix, but you can't even eat that bread by itself, as we're gonna discuss why. The reason is Dilma Ossi lo mechle bekutcha, because you might come to eat it with kutach, which is a dip made with milk, and then you're going to have basa b'cholov. So therefore, so Rava Bar Eli asked them to eat it all together, even by itself. Because the oven, now the place on the oven that was smeared with fat, now the bread that was baked on top of that, the bread that was baked or fried on top of that becomes fleishik. So therefore, he asked them to eat it even by itself, because you might come to eat it with milchik. Actually, Tosfos gets into the question, why do we say that's not by not? And one answer is that, in fact, that it's not by not, because the bread itself directly absorbed the fat. It's one thing you have, for example, you cook fish in a fleishik pot, for example. It doesn't directly absorb fleishiks, but over here it's directly absorbing the fat that it's on top of. So let's say you have a case in the Gemara in Cholin, Dogim Sha'ola Baka'ara. Not a pot over there. That's one distinction Tosfos makes over here. If you have fish, let's say, that were placed in a fleishik plate after they were cooked, are you allowed to then eat those fish with milchiks? And the answer is yes, because it's only not by not. It absorbed a flavor from the plate. And it's not even, there's not even so much heat over there, unlike when it's cooked in a pot or baked in an oven. And then so by the time you get to eating it with milchiks, then it's only not by not. But over here it's not, because here you have it's baked in an oven, and there's only one nois and tam. Not by not mean nois and tam by nois and tam. In other words, that you have something gave a flavor to something else, which in turn is going to give to something else. Generally in halacha, we don't consider not by not to be anything significant. Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara says Meisvi. I have a contradiction on Rav Bar Ahilai. A Braisa says, "Ein loshin esa isa b'cholov." You're not allowed to knead dough with milk. The imlosh, and if you did, kalapas kol asura, the whole bread is also to eat. Because it may lead you to an avedo, because you may end up eating with fleishiks. Now you do have dinim, by the way. The Gemara mentions in some other places, if you make a small amount of it, where you can eat it all in one sitting, or you make a simen, you make a distinctive shape on it, for example, so everybody realizes it's milchik, then you're allowed. Kayotzeboy, similarly. Ain toshin a satanu ba'alya. You're not allowed to smear the oven, an oven with tail fat, where, again, for the same idea, in order to bake bread on it. The im tosh, and if you did, kolapas kol asura, all the bread is also ad she yasik a satanu, unless he fires up the oven again. But we see, in other words, so we see if the oven is fired up again in the future, then the bread will be mutter. So it's a stira on Rav Bar Ahilai, because he said not only the original bread that you bake there after, it's not only the bread that you baked right after you put the grease. He says, when he says la'olam, means even, I missed that part, sorry, even if the oven was fired up again afterwards, still that any bread you bake in that oven forever is going to be usur, because the oven absorbed, the oven absorbed fat, and therefore every time you bake bread in it, that oven is, that bread is going to absorb the fat, and therefore it's going to be usur to eat it with milk. But the point is, we see from the braisa we just quoted, that you are allowed to, that as long as you fire up the oven again, then you are allowed to bake bread in it and eat it in the future. Whereas Rav Bar Ahilai is saying, from now on, you'll never be able to bake in this oven again. So tiufta de Rav Bar Ahilai. Yeah, tiufta, it's a contradiction. So the halacha is not like him. The halacha is that in fact, if you fired up the oven again, then you'll be able to bake bread in it for the future. Okay. Right, well, so that's the question now. Omale Ravina Rav Ashi, v'chimei achar de'itos of Rav Bar Ahilai. Now that we schlugged up Rav Bar Ahilai, and we say that even though the oven one time was greased with fat, in the future you'll be able to fire up the oven again, and then you'll be able to break bread in there, and the bread will be mutter to eat. Amai koma Rav k'deiris Pesach yishavru. So why is Rav saying that pots have to be broken when it comes Pesach? You should have the same thing. The same way as we're saying that you can fire up the oven, the same thing, you should be able to fire up the pots. So he answers, Hosam tano shal matches, hocha b'k'deiris shal cheres. The difference is that in that case, it was a metal oven. So therefore, you can fire it up again, and therefore it's mutter. Which, by the way, I mean, we could have answered. We didn't have to shlug up Rav Abaye Lai. We could have said that it's talking about an earthenware oven. However, the Mefarshim explained that the Gemara knew that the case that Rav Abaye Lai was talking about involved a metal oven. And therefore, we shlugged him up, because a metal oven, once you fire it up again, there's no trace of chametz left in it, and I mean, of the fat left in it, and therefore the bread should be mutter. As opposed to Rav is talking about Hocha B'Kedera Shocheres. Here we're talking about an earthenware pot, and earthenware can't be kashered. Another possibility, even the earthenware, even the oven in Rav Abaye Lai's case was earthenware, but the difference is zeh seken mebefnim vezeh has seken mebachutz. The difference is an oven you fire up by putting the fire on the inside of it. So therefore it burns away any chametz or any fat or whatever that's inside it. The direct fire, as opposed to vezeh hasekun mebachutz, as opposed to with a pot, where do you put the fire? On the outside of it. You put the pot on top of the fire. So that's not enough to get everything out of the inside of it. So you're going to say, okay, well then very simple. Let's put a fire inside the pot, and that'll burn out everything. And then why do we have to break the pot? The answer is you can't, because chai salei mishum depoka. You might be over careful about it because it's going to break. If you fire up a clay pot from the inside, the heat is likely to make it break. So you are likely to say, if you're told you have to kasher this pot, you're likely to start cutting corners and saying, yeah, but I'm not going to do it on the inside because it'll destroy the pot. I'll just do it on the outside like I regularly do when I use this pot, and that's not going to work. So therefore, we're not allowing you to do it in the first place. Yeah, because on the outside, the heat dissipates, right? The heat goes everywhere, as opposed to on the inside, the heat is going to be concentrated inside, and it's enough to make it crack, yeah. So therefore, we're not going to allow it, because a person is going to be afraid to do it on the inside, who's going to start cutting corners or whatever and think it's enough to do it on the outside. So therefore, that's why Rav said, just break the pot and have done with it. Hilkach, the Gemara says, therefore, we can derive from this another din. Hai buchya, when you have a buchya, Rashi describes it's a keli made out of tiles. It's sort of like a pan made out of tiles, made out of earthenware tiles. They would use it for baking on it or frying on it. It was sort of like a combination of a frying pan and a hot plate or something. So hesekim mebachotsu, usually the way that you use it is by firing it from the outside, because usually the way you use it is similar to a pot. You put a fire on the stove, then you put the buchya on top of that, and then you put the dough or whatever it is that you're baking or cooking on top of it. So therefore it's going to be also to use it during Pesach, because you have the same problem. The fact that it's fired up from the other side is not enough to get out the chametz that it absorbs from the top side, because it's made out of tiles, right? Buchya means a pan made out of tiles. But the imalya gumre shapur dummy. But if you fill up the top side of it with coals, then it's fine, because unlike a pot, you're not afraid to do that. You're not afraid it's going to crack it. A buchya is much harder, and maybe also the idea is it's flat. So therefore, either way, the heat is not going to be concentrated inside to the point where it might break it. So therefore, with a buchya, you could put coals on the side of it where usually you put the dough, and that would be enough. And then you could say that even though it's earthenware, that's something that it's something that you can kasher. But when it comes to a pot, we don't say that. The general idea is, as the Gemara is going to say later on, that earthenware kalim you can't kasher. However, what you can do is you can do libun on it, where you can do libun on it, where in effect you're making it into a new keli. How earthenware is made to begin with, by firing it up in an oven. So if you put it back in an oven, in some places the Gemara calls that machzir l'kivshonis, you put it back into the kiln where it was fired up to begin with, then that makes it as though it was a new keli. So the rule still remains. You can't kasher earthenware, but you can make the earthenware into a new keli, which you do, in effect, you do that by libun. So we're saying with a pot, you can't do libun, because the only valid way we would do it on the inside, and you're not going to want to do it on the inside because then the pot will break, and therefore you're going to cut corners and do it only on the outside. But when it comes to a buchya, which is flatter, then there you're able to do it from the inside, and therefore that's a valid way of like putting it back into the kivshon and making it into a new keli. Okay. Another thing in this connection about kasher and kelim for Pesach, Amalei Ravina L'Ravashi, Hane Sakine B'Pischa Hechi Avdin L'Hu. What do we do? Ravina asked Ravashi, what do we do about knives when it comes for Pesach? Knives that we use for chametz throughout the year. What do we do with them comes Pesach? Amalei, so Ravashi says, L'didi Chad Tzaka Avdinan, for me, they make new ones. So therefore I don't have a problem with it. I instead of kashering them, I get new ones. Well, knives had metal blades. They had metal blades, and the handles were made out of wood. So wait, so Ravashi says I get new ones. Amalei, so he says Tenach Ma'ad Efshalei. Okay, that works for you. You're rich. You can afford new knives for Pesach. Deloy Efshalei Mai. What about people who can't afford new knives for Pesach? What should they do? Amalei, so Ravashi answers Anok. I don't mean that they actually make me new knives. I mean they make my knives like they were new for Pesach. Meaning, what do we do? Katayu betina. First, what I do is I have them take the handles and cover them with clay in order to protect them from the heat of the fire for the next step. Then uparzalayu benura. Then I have the blades of them are put in fire as libun. Now, the problem is, if you're doing that, the handle, which is made out of wood, is going to burn. That's why first you put the clay coating on the handle in order to protect it from the heat of the fire. Then you're able to do libun on the blade. And then I put the handles into boiling water. The idea is, with the general idea with kashering is, whatever way a keli absorbed something that's treif is how you have to get it out later on. So now when it comes to the handles are never used directly on the fire because they would burn. Therefore, hagola is enough for them. Why are we saying over here the blades need libun? So there's a few ways of understanding it. One is that the knives are often used as spits to roast things directly over the fire. So therefore, the blades are used directly with the fire, and therefore you need libun on them. Another way, Tosfos says, is maybe actually Ravashi is only being machmer on himself. Maybe, and the Gemara is going to go on to say that you really only need to kasher the entire knife in boiling water. You really only need hagola, but maybe Ravashi was machmer on himself. On top of that, you have a question, you have a discussion among the poskim. Now we have a concept the Gemara mentions in Avodah Zarah. Tosfos refers to it over here. Do we make a distinction between when the thing absorbed the substance, when the keli absorbed the substance, was the substance itself osur or mutter? For example, there's a difference between a knife that, an example the Gemara mentions over there is, let's say you have a knife or a spit or a pot or whatever that absorbed, let's say, kodshim, and then later on it becomes noiser. So when it absorbed, it was hetera bala, it was absorbing something that was mutter at the time, only later on it became osur, versus, let's say, you used it for nevela, which was osur to begin with. Which category is chametz Pesach in? Is chametz considered like a teira bola? Because after all, before Pesach, you're allowed to have chametz. Or is it maybe considered isura bola? Because chametz intrinsically is something which is also on Pesach. It happens that this one was before Pesach. So that also affects the question whether what level of kashering you need for the keli. So again, one way of understanding is that so that also affects the question that do we need to do libun on the blade of the knife. Rav Ashi may have held yes, but that may have been a chumrah. It could be that, as Gemara is going to say, the halacha is you only need hagola for the knife, even if it's occasionally used for roasting. As a you usually go according to the usual use of the keli. You don't go according to the one time you used it for something else. We don't pay attention for that. And a reason behind that, by the way, is because the whole concept of kasher and kelim is really only dirabanan. We talked before on Amud Aleph about nois and tam lefgam. When you kasher a keli, it has to be a tam pogum because you can't kasher a keli within 24 hours after you used it. So necessarily, the tam is always pogum anyway. So the whole concept you should have to kasher them is only dirabanan. Therefore, we can be makel and say that you only go according to the major use of it. Okay. Anyway, the Gemara says v'hilchsa aidi v'aidi b'roischin of a klirishin. The halacha is you don't need to do like what Rav Ashi did and do libun on the blades of the knives. It's enough to do hagola. It's enough to do hagola in boiling water in a klirishin for the entire knife. Yeah, there also a machlokas whether the klirishin has to dafka be sitting on the fire or whether it can be even if you took it off the fire. Amar Rav Huna b'Rei d'Rav Yeshua, here's another thing. Eitz Porer, a wooden spoon that you use for stirring the food in the pot. Mag'ila b'Rois Chinuv Akli Rishon. You need to do agola for it using boiling water and a klirish in kasava, because he holds the same rule as before. Kaboila kach pelte, the same way as it absorbed. That's how it exudes it when you kasher it. And since the eighth potter is used only in a klirish and you don't use it directly on the fire because water will burn, then therefore agola is enough for it. Again, you have the same machlokas. Is it enough to do it in a klirish and that's off the fire? Because maybe you use the eighth potter generally only when the pot itself is off the fire. You don't usually use it necessarily when the pot is on the fire. Oh, it depends. I mean, obviously, it depends what kind of tavshil you're making. But many times, you have an eighth potter is often used only when the pot is off the fire. So maybe kashering and a clearishin off the fire is already good. Or maybe not. Maybe you need it to be actually on the fire. Okay. Bo mine me a meimar. They asked a meimar, or Hagoy Sabach says it's really supposed to be meremar, the following question. Hani moni de kunya. These earthenware kalim that are glazed. So they have, Rashi describes, they're made out of earthenware, and then they're glazed with a layer of lead. Nowadays, we would never do that. We know how dangerous that is, but in those times, they didn't know about lead poisoning. With that said, though, Tosfos elsewhere talks about that we're not talking about they're glazed with lead, we're talking about they're glazed with glass. Anyway, whatever it is, Maulish to Mushi Behuba Pischa, the ones that you use throughout the year, are you allowed to use them on Pesach? So Yeruka Loitiboiloch, now he goes on to say, if they're made out of a clay that's greenish, then Loitiboiloch, then there's no question to Vade Asiri, they're definitely going to be Osir, because the greenish ones Rashi describes are made from a type of earth that contains alum. Alum is a chemical compound that contains aluminum and sodium and I don't know what else. So the point is it's very absorbent. So therefore it's necessarily going to absorb some of the food. Therefore it's going to be an earthenware keli that absorb today for food or chametz food in this case. It's going to be osir. So no question that one's off limits. Those are definitely osir. The question is, what if the earthenware kalim are black or white? They're made out of a regular kind of clay, which is less absorbent than the green stuff. And and he continues, if the glazing has cracks in it, so therefore food can go through the cracks into the body of the keli, also loitiboyloch, then there's no question, then it's definitely also kitiboyloch deshi. The question is, if the coating, if the lead or the glass or whatever, the glazing is smooth. So there's nothing, so the question is basically, does the food only penetrate the glaze, and since it's lead, then you can kasher it like any other metal, or does it actually penetrate into the body of the keli, and then it's klicheres? Amalei, so a meimar or meremar answers, chazinu lohu demidaiti, we see when we cook with such kalim that they sweat on the outside, that you have a little bit of the substance of the food you can see is coming out on the outside of the keli. Therefore, Alma Bali, obviously that means therefore they absorbed it and it went all the way through the wall and it's coming out on the outside. Va'asiri, therefore they're also, because Va'atoda he'ida al klei cheres, because the Torah tells us about klei cheres, she'ene yotzimi de doifav la'olam, that it never loses its doifav, which means it's bad quality, basically, like doifi, like the Lashon doifi means something bad, something negative. In other words, the idea is, it actually explains, when it comes to other kinds of kalim that we use, let's say, to cook a chatas in, so the Torah tells us that you have to wash them and kasher them and whatever, but kli cheres, the Torah says, you shover, you have to break it. Yeah, they would cook with everything. Okay, that's what we were talking before about pots. But so if you cooked, let's say, for example, if you cooked a chatas in a metal keli, then you can kasher it, or modak v'shutaf amayim, you wash it and you cleanse it with water, and then that way, whatever it absorbed, it's going to exude, and then therefore you can cook in the future with it without having a problem of noiser. But kli cheres, the Torah tells us, you shover. It has to be broken. So therefore, so you see that kli cheres can never be kashered, even if it's smooth, yeah. I once saw an explanation, by the way. In a regular year, we always read Parshas Tzav on the Shabbos before on Shabbos Agadol. And why is that? One reason is based on that. This pasuk about earthenware versus metal versus wood kalim is in Parshas Tzav, so it helps as a reminder to people, deal with kashering your kalim before Pesach. Yeah. Anyway, So the question is, so the bottom line is the keli is going to be osur, even if the glazing is smooth and even if the body of the keli itself was made out of less absorbent clay. Nevertheless, we still see that it absorbs, and since it's a kli cheres, then you can. Again, as we said before, you could put it in the oven. You could put it in the kiln and rebake it in there, but that wouldn't be considered kasher, and that would be in effect making a new keli. Okay, so the Gemara asks, so my shnal inyan yain nesach. So why is it different than the case of yain nesach? The darash maremar, the same maremar gave a drasha, money de kunya, glazed kalim, bein uchma, bein chivrei, bein yiroki shari, whether they're black or white or green, or even the green, even the really absorbent green ones, shari, all of them are mutu. You can use them, for kosher wine afterwards. So you're going to say the issue of yain nesach, and really by yain nesach we mean he was stam yainam, wine of goyim, where you don't know if it was used for avodah zarah or not, is the rabbanon, whereas chametz is daraisa. That's not a valid answer because we know kol the tokun rabbanon kein daraisa tokun. We know when the chachamim make a takana, they usually make it as similar to the parallel thing daraisa. So therefore, so if daraisa all these kalim are osur, then they should be osur by yain nesach as well. Amalei, so Marema answers, Zetashmisha al de tsoinen. The difference is the pots we're talking about as far as Pesach were used throughout the year for hot food, so they absorbed a lot more, as opposed to the keli that was used for Yain Nesach, it was used for cold Yain Nesach, so therefore it doesn't really absorb as much. So more on this topic. Omer Rava bar Abba, Omer Rav Chiya bar Ashi, Omer Shmuel. Kol hakelim shenishtam shebein chometz betzoinen. Any kelim that throughout the year you use for cold chametz food, mishtamash behen matzah, you're allowed on Pesach to use them for Pesach tikkah food. Yesh omrim that you're still not allowed to use them for hot Pesach tikkah food, because then you still might have that whatever little amount they absorbed is going to come out into the food. I think the mainstream understanding, la halacha, is it's not like that, and technically you'd be allowed to use them even for hot, even for hot Pesach tikkah food. L'maisa, of course, you know, we don't do any of that. We just put away, yeah. Anyway. So chutz min beis sa'ur, with the exception of a keli that's used to hold sa'ur, that's used to hold sourdough for preparing dough. Because the chimutz of it is very strong. Sometimes it actually describes you leave the sa'ur in it overnight, and therefore it absorbs a lot, an intense amount of chametz flavor, and even therefore, so it's like kovosh sort of. So therefore, even you're going to And as a matter of fact, yeah, this heter that we're saying over here, as far as kalim that we use for cold chametz food throughout the year, only applies if it wasn't liquid that was in there for 24 hours, or a sharp liquid that was in there for a shorter amount of time. Because yeah, then it absorbs more. But here, so we're saying the beis sa'ur is an effect like that. It absorbs an intense amount of chametz flavor, and therefore it's going to give it out even into cold Pesach tikka food that you'd put into it. Also, a container that you use for charoses has the same din as a beis sa'ur. Charoses, now we're familiar with charoses only on Pesach. Rashi explains the basic meaning of the word charoses. We're going to have it later on in the parak as well. The basic meaning of charoses means something sharp, means some kind of sharp tasting dip that you use to dip bread or meat or whatever in. So among other things, in those kinds, so for example, like nowadays, dressing would be an example of charoses. Very often they would put flour into the charoses, into this kind of charoses. So therefore it's chametz, and because it's sharp, then therefore again the container absorbs the taste of the chametz, even though it wasn't hot. So the word charoses, Rashi says, means basically loshen charoses kihui. It means something sharp. Means a sharp or sour kind of food. Kihui actually means more like sour, like something that puts your teeth on edge when you eat it. So the charoses we have nowadays is not really, I mean, it's not really like that. It's not really particularly sharp, but you have there's different recipes for charoses that different kehilos have. That some of them are sharper than others. Yeah, ours is fairly bland, but yeah, okay. The truth is, by the way, I mean, our charoses used to have spices in it, you know, apple, baran, nissen, ingwer, and cimmerin. It used to have ginger and cinnamon in it. Later on, the minhag developed not to use the ginger and the cinnamon because you have a chashash of chametz in the spices, that the spices may have been packed in chametz or mixed with chametz or whatever. And bechlal, we don't use spices on Pesach. But the original recipe for our type of charoses was a little bit sharper than we're familiar with. Okay. Amar Rava. Hani Agni de Mechuzah. So Rava says, by the same token, the kneading bowls that they use in Mechuzah, we're like, you have nowadays a big bowl that you need dough for challah in. Hoyle to Diri the Melech Bahu. Since they're always kneading dough in it, they're always kneading chametz dough in it, and they leave the dough in it for a while because when it needs to rise, those also have the din, like the base sir, which absorb an intense amount of chametz, and therefore you can't use them on Pesach even for cold food. So the Gemara asks Pshita, obviously, why we understand they're used for kneading a lot, and yeah, they absorb a huge amount of chametz. The answer is Ma'u de Tema Kivin de Revicha. You would say, yeah, but the difference is the base Sa'ur and the base Charosis we were talking before are small Kalim. So therefore, the chametz flavor that they absorb doesn't really have anywhere to dissipate to. But here, these bowls that we're talking about are very wide. Shalot b'hu avira. So you could argue the air affects them. The loy bali. So maybe they don't absorb that much lachatchila. Kamash malon. Therefore, Rava wants to tell us that not. Even though they're very wide, nevertheless, they absorb an intense amount of chametz flavor, and therefore you can't use them for Pesach tikka food. So that's the thing. Even if it's a tray or it's a bowl or whatever, but still it absorbs that, and therefore it's also to use on Pesach, even for cold Pesach tikka food. But other kinds of kalim that we use again. So if you have a keli that was used only for cold chametz tikka food, and it's not like a base sa'ur or base charosis or whatever, where it absorbs an intense flavor, and it wasn't used for hot food, and it wasn't used for kavosh or whatever, then yes, in principle, you could use it without kashering for cold Pesach tikka food. Yeah. Although nowadays, I don't know anybody who would do that. Shkoyach, everyone. Yeah, you really would.